Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a ton of books that have come out this week. And
sure,
let's kick it off with a huge one. Avengers number 50 from Marvel, written by Jason Aaron and Christopher Ricuccio, art by Aaron Cooter, Carlos Pacheco, Ed McGuinness, Javier Garrone, Delavid Baldion, and Steve McNiven. This is a giant, I believe it's 89 pages, that's not only tying up things from Jason Aaron's run, telling a story of its own, but teeing up not one, but two ongoing comic books. So a lot of stuff to do in here. How successful do you think it was in all of that, as well as a book on its own?
I thought it was hugely successful. This book is like 100% fun. It's like Jason Aaron's run on Avengers. I just feel like it satisfies a comic book urge that I have, that I think is just, it feels like high octane, like comics from the 90s and beyond, all put together. So much is happening here. He's mashing up so many different villains. The threats seem so intense, and there's still more moves to be made. I love it.
Yeah, this is jam-packed with ideas. This is just in great ways. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of cool kind of like crossover stuff. You get some smooching in here. You get some unbelievable action, a lot of like over the top stuff. Yeah, I think this really delivers and is intense in all the right ways. It's a ton of fun, really great artwork. And it's just, it's fun.
Yeah, I was really pleasantly surprised as well. Like you were saying, Justin, I think we've talked around this a lot, but Jason Aaron is so much more successful at making it feeling like you're playing with toys. When sometimes I'll read these things, like, this is not to slag off anybody's hard work, but things like the Darkhold thing, where it's like, oh, they're the heroes, but they're goopier than usual. You know what I'm talking about? Sometimes it feels very calculated, a way to, you know, reskin Marvel Future Fight or whatever that's they're aiming towards there, to give these other things. But the way that Jason Aaron does it here, we get this multiversal Masters of Evil is trying to destroy Avengers throughout the multiverse, starting with their prehistoric millions of years back origin versions. But it all feels ludicrously fun the entire time. It feels very light. And I think part of that is the art team that's been assembled here. Particularly love Aaron Cooter's art always. Love Ed McGuinness. They feel like a perfect fit in particular with what Jason Aaron is doing. But like you're saying, it's light, it's fun. The thing that kicks off Avengers Forever, mild spoils here, but Robbie Reyes has some stuff going on with Ghost Rider. He's teamed up with the Deathlok, is traveling through the multiverse to assemble an Avengers of his own. This is just a blast. This is a blast to read.
Let me list a couple of the things that happened, and we should pick favorites because there's so many cool things. There's Kazar, the Savage Herald, this weird shit with the orb, Namor screwing around, the romance between the prehistoric Phoenix and Odin, Howard Stark rolling through, the Deathlok stuff, the sort of heartfelt moment with Robbie Reyes, just the panels, pages and pages of these teams throughout history. Like, what was the She-Hulk stuff?
Go ahead, Pete. Please.
I was just going to say, I really like the orb. I thought that was hysterical.
That guy's weird.
Yeah, but that was a huge, when I was a younger kid, like the orb would always go up against Ghost Rider, and that was always a creepy, kind of crazy looking comic. So it was fun to see kind of this orb. But I'm also a sucker for Deathlok and Robbie Reyes rolling in a car. That was a great team up, a lot of fun.
Like Pete's talking about, Jason Aaron clearly loves the orb and loves using the orb as much as he humanly can. The stuff where the orb is trying to be this dark watcher with the Masters of Evil was so funny. Such a great sequence. But the thing for me, it's a very calculated thing that you knew was going to come at some point. But the way they work back to old school style She-Hulk, I thought was great. And I was so happy to see her back, even though I really enjoyed this more savage take on the She-Hulk. So that's going to be really fun to see going forward. But like we've been saying, so much fun stuff in this issue. It's enormous. It's packed. It's a big anniversary issue, but definitely worth the pickup. Let's move on to another big idea, but from the other big two publisher, Justice League Incarnate, number one from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson and Dennis Culver, art by Brandon Peterson, Andre Bresson, and Tom Derenick. This is a kicking out of, oh, I'm forgetting what the name of the crossover was.
Infinite Frontier?
Thank you. And we're getting this team up of multiversal Justice League characters in this one that are fighting against Darkseid and a bunch of other bad stuff that's coming the DC Universe's way. I'll tell you what, I enjoyed the first couple of issues of Infinite Frontier, but I was a little iffy on it in total. I like this. I think this worked quite a bit. What about you guys?
Super fast paced. There's the thing, my complaint about this is definitely something that maybe just about me, but get Captain Carrot out of here.
You are gunning directly for Pete because I read this book and I was like, Pete loves this jacked up Captain Carrot, right?
Don't like him. Yeah, go home. I can't take this book seriously when you got this goofy rabbit jumping around. Silly rabbit.
That's the thing that pulls you out. Just like not all the other crazy shit.
I mean, that was also a review of when we talked about Watership Down, and that book is very sad.
Yeah, but those rabbits are goofy. Go home.
Oh my God.
Is what I say. Watership Down. I can't believe I'm saying this. That book makes me cry.
I thought this was a really great issue of DC comic action. I feel like they did a great job of like really taking a kind of like a classic DC comic and making something fun. I love the big boss battle. I think this the art is great. It's a great first issue that gets you excited for more. And I don't have a problem with Captain Carrot.
Oh, I thought you actively liked him, is what I was saying. But you just don't have a problem with him.
What do you like about him? The rabbit part?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess we just have different opinions.
The Death of Doctor Strange, Spider-Man number one from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by Marcelo Ferreira. This is taking the Ben Reilly Spider-Man because part of Peter Parker is currently dying of radiation poisoning in a hospital bed, teams him up with the Black Cat to pick up some of the tasks left from the death of Doctor Strange over in that crossover. Pete, what'd you think of this one?
Well, this isn't my favorite Spidey. You know, I like Peter Parker, not a fan of the Ben guy.
I like, what's his name? Porter?
Peter Parker. Peter Parker's my guy.
Wait, hold on. Makes sense.
You're
question,
such a
Justin.
Rabbit guy.
Do you like Peter Parker but don't like Captain Carrot?
Yep. Yes. Here's the thing. Peter Parker, separate. He like, you're keeping your peas out of your carrots, out of your Captain Carrots. You keep them separate. Yeah. And then Captain Carrot mixed in with all these other Justice League people who are just like, I'm very serious and we have to fight Darkseid. And he's like, I'm a rabbit.
He's a jacked rabbit. I think you want a jacked rabbit on your side.
That's why they call them jack rabbits, is because they're so muscly.
Yeah,
exactly. I've stumbled into a rabbit gym the other day, a bunch of jack rabbits juicing up.
Juicing up on carrot juice. Justin, what did you think about this one? I know you're a big fan of Black Cat Spider-Man, but this is obviously a very different riff on that.
Yeah.
I thought this was great. I really like Jed McKay. Really been bringing the heat with Black Cat. And this book is a night. I mean, I agree we're in a weird time in the continuity of Spider-Man with him being in his hospital bed and Ben Reilly doing it. But I thought this story really makes good use of it. And the conversation throughout the issue between Black Cat and Ben about like what it means to be Spider-Man, why there needs to be a Spider-Man, and how she sort of gives him a hard time, but eventually is like, you're Spider-Man for now.
Like, yeah, that was fun. I thought it was fun at the end. But I did like how Wong was like, hey, wait a second, you're not Spider-Man. That was fun. I was like, you're right, Wong. Why are you sending this fake Spider-Man on a fucking mission here?
But you're not wrong, Wong.
Yeah.
There you go.
But I did think it was, you know, if you're going to send anybody to do your errands, you send Ben Reilly. You don't send the real Peter Parker. You know what I mean?
This book also was a great love letter to Doctor Strange. It's a really nice, like, sort
of... I thought
of...
you were going to say to the Central Park dragon, but okay.
Yeah. I'll also tell you what, though. Peter Parker, you're absolutely right, Pete. One of the worst possible people to send to do errands, because every single time he's going to get distracted, he's going to do something else, he's going to show up late. So Ben Reilly has already proved himself to be the superior Spider-Man.
Oh,
Alex. Ooh. Well, you really went for the triple, the hat trick on annoying Pete with Spider-Man terms.
Man, yes, he could sell in like my Peter marriage Park. To Mephisto anytime. That's what I'm saying about that Ben Reilly Spider-Man.
I don't like Peter Parker because he's late all the time, and that's a quality I can't tolerate.
Oh my God.
Wonder Woman
people
Historia.
People listening only knew.
Wonder Woman Historia, the Amazon's number one from DC Comics, written by Kelly Sue DeConnick, art by Phil Jimenez. This is a bold and gorgeous reinvention of the Wonder Woman mythology, going all the way back to the beginning of history. There are so many pages in this book that I just stopped yes. and looked at the individual pieces at. This is a phenomenal achievement of a comic book and easily my favorite thing that we read all week. Not to spoil the rest of the stack.
Alex, save it for the end. Yeah, this was very cool. I really liked the way that doing the big deep dive, it feels like a great reset point for just Wonder Woman in general. I mean, there's a lot going on in Wonder Woman books right now. There's another good Wonder Woman book we're going to talk about later.
Sure.
But this was really cool. And the J.H. Williams style, if you like J.H. Williams art, exactly. You're going to really love this book because it has that vibe. It's big, broad screen panel storytelling, super intricate, and big mythology building.
Yeah, all I got to say is wow. You got to read it more than once, okay? Once just for the art alone, and then the other time to go back and take it all in. The paneling is just unbelievable. The art is just really just a fantastic top-to-bottom book that is worth checking out.
This is incredible. This is one, frankly, we read this digitally, but I'm probably going to take myself to the comic book shop and try to pick up
take
a
yourself.
Physical
copy. Ooh, take yourself. Myself,
have a little,
take yourself.
Have a little me trip, you know what I'm talking
about?
Go.
Oh, yeah. Usually take
a off,
family,
you know,
right?
And just go to the comic book
just
shop.
Just a me trip. Let's move on and talk about Darkhold Black Bolt, number one from Marvel, written by Mark Russell, art by David Cutler. I know I was slagging off the Darkhold thing a little
you
bit
sure
earlier.
Were.
I have
literally moments ago you were down.
I have no idea, honestly, what this has to do at all with the Darkhold crossover, but this is a great Black Bolt story from the always reliable Mark Russell. Here, Black Bolt finds himself on an alien planet alone, his memory chopped up to bits. All he can remember is that one of his advisors may or may not have been replaced by his evil brother, Maximus. There's a twist here that I don't want to spoil that I did not see coming that I thought was fantastic. Just a really good one-shot issue, whether you've been reading the Darkhold stuff or not.
Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying. The Mark Russell, who sort of made his bones as like a comedy.
Killing a man. He made his bones by killing a man. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. That's how you do it. As a satire writer, like, really is getting into the superhero comics and really writing just really smart, unique stories and takes on these different characters. And this is another good one.
Yeah, this is, it's got twists and turns. It's unbelievable art. Definitely worth picking up. And ignore what Alex said earlier about, goopiness. This is a solid comic. So
light on goop.
Yeah. Light on goop. Here's something that's heavy on goop, though. Batman Fear State Omega, number one from DC Comics, written by James Tynion IV, art by Riccardo Federici, Christian Douche, Ryan Benjamin, Gillum March, and Trevor Hairsine. This is, as you could probably figure out from the title, wrapping up the whole Fear State crossover as Batman takes Scarecrow back to not Arkham Asylum, but the new asylum in town, gives him the rundown of everything that's going on with everybody in Gotham City. I'll tell you what, I'm not usually a fan of these wrap-up, touch-on-everything, set-up-this-new status quo books, but I thought this was very well done, and I really like the story they were telling here.
Well, and I think it's because this book wasn't just a wrap-up of this event. I think it was really James Tynan's goodbye book to be like, here's all the stuff that I created in my time on the Bat books, and let's have it all in one place so maybe we can use some of these characters because they are interesting. You got your Clown Hunter. You got your Ghost Maker. You've got the Unsanity Collective. All these are fun things that I would like to see more of, and this book really lays them out.
I can understand why, Alex, you would like this. This book has a lot of dad energy. It's basically Batman lecturing somebody the whole car ride and being like, Scarecrow, let me tell you what you did wrong and why you are bad. And you're going to have to sit here in the uncomfortable Batmobile while I drive you all the way back to prison and tell you why you're a bad person.
You think the Batmobile is uncomfortable? You don't think
he's springing for the... He made the joke about like, oh, why don't you get a bigger Batmobile that's more comfortable? And he's like, oh, I picked the more sporty one to make it
uncomfortable. You are kind of right because Scarecrow does keep asking when they're going to get there repeatedly throughout the book. So
are we there yet?
Yeah. Fair point.
I'll turn this car right around.
Yeah.
I'll turn this Batmobile right around.
And there's a reveal at the end that I will say it's not that big of a deal, but it's like, stay tuned for Arkham Tower. That's right. We moved this asylum up in the building
a little bit. It's sort of like, okay.
That seems like a bad idea.
Yeah, you're going to need an elevator, Joker, if you want to get out of this place.
How do I use these buttons? Do I press M or L in this building? Oh, no, we're on the mezzanine.
I did like, though, how Batman was like, yeah, I'll give you your mask back. You know what I mean? I know what it's like to not have your mask on and feel naked. So here you go.
Your mask is your glasses and hoodie, right, Pete?
You're damn right.
Bruce Wayne may appear to be a wealthy playboy, but beneath this facade, his true identity is that of the Batman, waging an endless war against crime. Join the Caped Crusader and Batman The Audio Adventures, the first scripted audio original featuring Batman and his villainous rogues gallery in a world premiere story of life and death in Gotham City, debuting exclusively on HBO Max. Starring Jeffrey Wright as Batman and a who's who of incredible Saturday Night Live alums, this rollicking adventure told across 10 episodes is written and directed by Emmy winner Dennis McNicholas, includes devilishly delightful original music by Doug Bossi, and performances by Rosario Dawson, John Leguizamo, Chris Parnell, Melissa Villaseñor, Seth Meyers, Jason Sudeikis, Brooke Shields, Fred Armisen, and many, many more. Go to hbomax.com/Batman Audio Adventures for more and stream Batman The Audio Adventures only on HBO Max.
Next up, King of Spies, number one from Image Comics, written by Mark Millar, art by Matteo Scalera. This is about an aging James Bond type who goes back for one last mission. You know what this is.
Mark Millar never fails to not do his thing, where he's like, oh, I have a comic. It's something you know about with a little twist that is like pretty well, like it's well executed. Like the story's fun. Like
the art's
it's
great.
Cool. Art's great. He always has great artists that he's working with. But I want him to break his formula. I mean, I don't know if he ever will. What's the point of that now?
Yeah, why?
But, just writing short comic books that can then be made into something else. And that's, again, exactly what this is. This is a movie pitch, which 100%. Is a good movie pitch.
Yeah, it's a good movie pitch. We've talked about this every time with his books, but I'm reading this and I'm like, exactly what you're saying, Justin. It's just, this is so stupid. What is happening here? I know exactly what he's going for. But also, it is fun to read at the same time because the action is way over the top and uber violent. And it's enjoyable at the same time.
I will say the first seven pages where you're seeing our James Bond in his prime, I was like, it doesn't have to be this intense. Like, we get it. But he's like killing people, running off shit. I was like, come on, he could just be normal James Bond.
Well, also because we know who James Bond is, you don't need that information at the beginning there. Just cut to the part where he's old and he's 6 months from dying. We know what is going to happen. That's not a good cliffhanger for the book. Open, not to edit Mark Millar's book, but open up with being like, hey, super spy, you're going to die in 6 months. And he's like, well, time to kill a bunch of dudes.
Or just a short little thing where it's like a super spy drinking a martini who like is about to, is like being seduced or is seducing someone. And suddenly he pulls out his pistol and shoots someone who you didn't think was a villain. Then it's sort of fun and surprising, as opposed to like, can you imagine how I'm going to shoot all these people? Like, I was like, he's up, dude.
Yeah, he is the king of spies. So there you go.
Yeah,
Wonder Woman 20. Oh, go ahead, Pete.
Yeah, I would like to say some things about this comic. Okay, it's sorry. One of those things where you guys were just going back and forth.
Pete, you said a whole thing.
Yeah, I remember very clearly. Nope. You said several things about this book.
I love James Bond. Moonraker's my favorite movie.
No, I didn't say that. I didn't say any of that. Yeah, I'm not, as much as, I'd like to say I'm above this. This is in my wheelhouse of things. And I just thought this was a great example of, I'm going to give you exactly what you want and you're going to love it anyway. And I was like, thank you. I'll have another, please. So, I just thought the action was great. It was over the top. And why not? I think this is, a great example of how comics can, be fun, and it doesn't have to be, anything more than just this idea. So why not? And I'm on board. So I thought it was super enjoyable.
Next up, Wonder Woman 2021, annual number one from DC Comics, written by Becky Cloonan and Michael W. Conrad, art by Andy McDonald. In this issue, the returned Wonder Woman comes face to face with a new villain who has some interesting ideas and interesting twists on the history of Themyscira that is going to kick into the Trial of the Amazons crossover that's going to start next year. I really, really liked the ideas that were at play here, and I think these are very interesting villains. What did you guys think?
This writing duo, I think, is doing a great job of finding new territory for Wonder Woman to explore. I thought this was a very cool thing where Wonder Woman is going to be sort of, she's going to learn stuff that she's going to be ashamed of, I think, over the course of this crossover, which I think is great. I haven't seen her in that position. My one quibble with the book is it felt very strange that Wonder Woman was so late. She's someone who isn't late. Mm-hmm. She's not a Peter Parker.
I will say she did feel a little off this issue. And I think part of that is her returning, but maybe there is something deeper there in terms of something different about Diana now that she's back in the world. Pete, what did you think?
Well, first off, Justin, you can't say shit, okay? I think that if, someone's going to be late, Wonder Woman has plenty of reasons to be late, so it's fine. But I do think that this is an unbelievable annual. This is a lot of fun. I really liked how creepy the kind of villain was and how Wonder Woman was like, I knew you were following me. I think this is kind of like a really great just kind of Wonder Woman story, and I really love the art. I really think this is such a good team, and the art and the storytelling are just really solid.
Next up, Deadly Class number 49 from Image Comics, written by not Mark Millar, by Rick Remender, and art by Wes Craig. In this issue, we're finally getting back to Saya and Marcus.
Yes.
With a big twist here that, again, I don't want to spoil. But they catch up with each other over the course of the issue. I thought this was great. Pete?
Yeah, this is everything we wanted. Them finally getting back together, giving us hope. I'm really worried about Rick Remender, what he's going to do to us.
It's the opposite of hope, Pete.
Yeah, I don't think they're back together.
It seems like they're back together, and I'm going to think that everything is going to be just fine.
That is how Rick Remender usually writes his books, is with happy endings.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe this will be the one. This will be
the reveal at the end of the book made me think it is very much the opposite of them being happily back together.
Yeah, but I'm still going to hold out hope. I just think this writing and artist duo, just unbelievable. This is such a great book. The art, it's just such a great package. Killing it. Absolutely killing it. Deadly Class is so much fun.
I think we can officially say that it's a great package is your catchphrase now and no longer mine. I think that...
the tight package is what your favorite saying is.
This is so good.
Pete, can you stop line producing the podcast, please?
Yeah, my bad.
Not what that is. This is... The detail work, the focus, the just minute-to-minute work that you see on display in this book, and really most of Rick
Remender's
work.
I don't mean to over-line produce, but the line is panel-to-panel, not line-to-line. So go ahead, sorry.
I don't know, you think line producing is producing the lines that I'm saying?
Yeah, that's right.
That's great. Anyway, I just think it's a cut above almost any book on the stands.
I was a big line producer at Studio 84 in the 80s. People would always be Studio like,
Studio 84?
84.
What are you talking about?
It was way... That's
in the, a couple blocks away from Studio 54.
There weren't a lot of people there.
It's too 84. Bad. They were missing out.
Yeah, Josh Warhol used to go.
Oh my God.
This is where a lot of the also rans, the younger brothers and sisters of the famous people were hanging out.
That's right. Yeah, it was very uncool. The Joker 2021 annual number one from DC Comics, written by James Tynion IV and Matthew Rosenberg, art by Francesco Francavilla.
Bergie.
Rosie.
Frankie. This is a fantastic one-shot that is tying into the Joker story, jumping back in time and showing us just as the mobsters have fallen and the villains of Gotham City are starting to rise. Great story of Commissioner Gordon. It's wild that this is called The Joker when this is clearly a Commissioner Gordon book, but another really good story from this team.
This is so much fun. This is such a great... issue, annual, whatever you want to. I was just blown away. It seems like such a cool, like Batman Year One kind of story, but about the Commish Gordon there. I just was really impressed by this. These DC annuals have been killing it this week. Unbelievable.
Really. The flashback nature of this story I thought was great. Getting to see this era of these characters, and it has like big Dick Tracy vibes to it. Mm-hmm. With the Francavilla art, sort of very pared down Francavilla art. But again, I think I mentioned this the last book we talked about. It has the it reminds me of the Scott Snyder Francesco Francavilla run on Detective Comics, and we even get some reference of the characters in that. James Gordon's son is referenced a bit here, and I felt that connection there.
And I also love, this is getting into mild spoilers for the book, but I also love now that we know that Gordon has always kind of known that Barbara is Batgirl. Having that out of the way so they can talk about that and show what that was like for him back in the day when she was first starting out as Batgirl. I thought that really just added a really nice emotional layer to the book at the same time. Let's move on.
And very subtle, the move, because it's one of the other cops is like, how old is she? I'm always looking at her in her tights or whatever. And he's like, hey, knock it off. You?
Next up, let's talk about another emotional ending. The Me You Love in the Dark, number 5 from Image Comics, written by Scotty Young, art by Jorge Corona. This is tying up the story of a woman who is in love, maybe? Physical relationship? Relationship with an entity who lives in her house and seems to be feeling her art. It all ends here. Justin, I know you were pretty big on this issue. What did you think about it?
I think this comic is super unique. It's very rare for like a small, like, short series like this that really comes in with its own way of telling its story, very like paced, very specifically. It's a straight up horror story, beautifully drawn. that you really sit with. It sits with you. Like, every issue of this is just got better and better and more rich. And it's not like you don't see what's coming, but the way it's told, I think, is just great. I want to see this as like a great horror short film.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I wanted this to happen earlier. You know, it gets really scary for the main character who's trapped in this relationship. But I'm glad that she's smart enough for what happened to happen, and I don't want to spoil it. But, man, this series was creepy in all the right ways. The art was unbelievable, just really magical and creepy in all the right ways. But, man, what a cool book and a great ending.
Next up, The Human Target, number 2 from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Greg Smallwood. In this issue, The Human Target, who now has 11 days to live thanks to accidentally ingesting poison that was meant for Lex Luthor, gets to interview Ice from the Justice League International, spend the day with her. I'll tell you what, not to creep out totally, this was a very sexy book.
Oh, God.
Yeah, right? It was. No
like,
doubt.
It was legit. Like, the James Bond stuff, frankly, that they were going for in King of Spies, that your mileage may vary in terms of it worked. It's here. Like, it is in here.
Exactly. That's exactly spot on.
They nail it completely.
Yeah, it's just this book, it has some, like, it reminds me a little bit of Matt Fraction's Hawkeye run. I know that's a much talked about, and David Aja's run. I know that's a much talked about book with the Hawkeye TV series, but it has that sort of just big swing, like very specific art choice that is telling an awesome story. And then it does have like James Bond film noir energy, but with Human Target and Ice from Justice League International having this great sort of like tense but sexy day together and pushing the story forward. Tom King has done it again.
Yeah, this is just
he's done it again.
It's another classic.
Somebody has to stop him. He's keeps doing it.
Classic King story here. I really love the blue tones that were going on here. Amazing art style. Just, you know, classic King storytelling. What's happening? Giving you little bits of information is very cool and worth checking out.
He's the King of San Diego.
Wow. No, we that all
only
know
makes
that
sense to a
that
very
title.
Small. Bit of belongs people. To somebody the else. Department of Truth, number 14 from Image Comics, written by James Tynion IV, art by John J. Pearson. This is another sort of times past issue of this comic book. We're going back and seeing when Lee Harvey Oswald just joined the Department of Truth and what happened there. I thought this was a great issue and honestly, sort of a nice break from the dense info dump we've got the past couple of issues here. Even though I really like this book, this felt a little lighter and easier and more dialogue focused rather than monologue heavy.
But really like laying out a lot of great information about the sort of the villain here. The villain's sort of been shrouded in mystery. I mean, I love this book and it feels, I think I've said this before, but it feels like real. It feels like I almost believe this just regular in real life, that the world, if enough people believe something, it changes the way the world works. It's such a great concept for a book. This is already in development for, I believe, television, and I can't wait. It's just really great.
It's creepy in all the right ways, down to the, like, even have some fun with the shaving your head bit and the eyebrows. That was hilarious. Yeah, this one was a little bit more straightforward, so I enjoyed it a little bit more. It was easier to follow. But, yeah, just this whole idea that is pushing forward of if people believe it, then it's true. So creepy, fucked up. I'm glad it's in comic book and not real.
It is real. Nightwing 2021 annual number 1 from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor, art by C.N. Torbay. This is the one where Red Hood goes rogue, seemingly, right? And Nightwing goes after him. As usual, a really good story from Tom Taylor. Again, Justin, I know you're pretty high on this one, so you want to talk about it?
I said this on the live podcast, but we are in – we are in a Nightwing renaissance, a Dick Graysonissance, that I think is definitely worth picking up if you haven't been reading this. And this is a great...
I'll tell you what, it's almost December.
Oh my God.
Oops. December 1st. Check it off. No.
Just cut that out of the podcast.
Definitely. That's how I'm going to refer to this month from here on out.
Oh my God.
But what I was saying is, it's a great brothers story, just brothers being friends, taking care of each other, and solving a mystery, and being less mean with your crowbar and guns.
Yeah, I thought this was a fun bros team up, great use of Clayface. I think this is just a fun book, and you know, if you're a fan of Nightwing, you are having the time of your life, so congratulations.
Wow. Chew number 10 from Image Comics, written by John Layman, art by Dan Boltwood. This is wrapping up the She Drunk History arc, which found them using time-traveling wine to steal a painting. Very fun, very twisty ending here that wraps up all of the storyline and then kicks us into the next one, which seems to be a big one. I love this book. The end.
Pete, you're the chew head.
Yeah, great. Yeah, this is fun. This continues to be like Chew, but a little different enough that it's its own thing and has its own kind of like feel. I'm enjoying this new Chew, and seem to be killing it. So it's unbelievable art, fun storytelling. You really enjoy this kind of fresh take on the new Chew. So yeah, this is great.
I never got into the original Chew, yeah. But I really like this series, and great twists and turns at the end. I like the way we get sort of the wins and losses for all the different characters here, and I would definitely read more of this.
Justice League Dark 2021 Annual Number 1 from DC Comics, written by Ram V and Dan Waters, art by Dan Waters. This is the Justice League Dark trying to figure out what's going wrong with magic in the DC universe, as usual. I'll tell you what, I went a little back and forth about this issue, frankly, because a lot of it is people sitting around a table getting each other caught up on information. But about halfway through the book, it starts to turn with the arrival of a new character, where it does become more dangerous, and it does become more interesting, and it is very much of that Vertigo mold of people sitting around and telling each other stories. So I started to like it quite a bit more, and there was a really fun narrative trick that happens in here in particular. But how did this strike you guys? Pete?
Yeah, I thought this was like really cool art. The style that they set up for this story is really interesting and cool. I love the team of characters that we get here. I thought it was a really cool story, and the art makes it worth it.
This was good.
Thanks, Justin. Wow. The Magic Order 2, number 2 from Image Comics.
No, sorry. What I was going to say is before we move on, I feel like I've missed this book. I really, it feels like it hasn't been around much. Detective Chimp has some great funny moments in here.
Yeah.
And I'm more excited about this than the sort of the top tier Justice League stuff.
I agree. Magic Order 2, number 2 from Image Comics, written by Mark Millar, art by Stuart Nonan. Maybe overloading it a bit with two Mark Millar books here.
But it's like drinking two back-to-back Mountain Dews.
But we like the first issue of this. This is about a world where magic is basically like the mafia, essentially, and we're getting a street gang who wants to move their way up and take down the mafia. As usual, there is some absolutely intense, extreme stuff that happens here. But Pete, was this in your comfort zone, like the King of Spies?
Oh, well, thank you. Yes, I do think that as far as comfort zone is, yeah, I think this was creepy and fun in all the right ways. It didn't get too fucked up, although the burning of voluntary burning of people was a little too much.
You've never been to a black wedding where two child corpses are married?
No.
Really? Oh, I gotta invite you the next time. You're fully vaccinated, right? Because they're very particular,
very strict about
it. Yes, I had a black wedding.
Unsubscribe
from this comment. Internet from 10 years ago. Justin, what did you think about this one?
I mean, there's a lot going on in this book. And I feel like, especially comparing this to the other Mark Millar book, which is all about just like, hey, I'm doing this one thing. This one is like, I'm doing a lot of things. And I hope you reread the previous issue before you read this one, because you're going to not know what's happening as much in this.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a mess, but maybe interesting to follow. Go Third and Stuart Eminem, as always, great on art. For the art alone, I always say. Batman 2021, annual number one from DC Comics, written by James Tynion IV, art by Ricardo Lopez Ortiz. Another annual, another Batman tale from James Tynion IV. What'd you guys think about this?
Well, I really love the stylized art on this. Like, this to me is such a cool kind of like art that I really loved. The 7-year-old in me really loved, and I think this is really cool still. Yeah, you know, it just kind of reaffirms things that, hey, if you thought this Ghostmaker guy was a psycho, you should have seen him as a kid. But yeah, I think this is still, I'm glad we're getting the kind of like bro time that Batman has. It's interesting that, like, if you're cool with Batman, he lets you break a shit ton of rules. You know, it's like, hey, Catwoman, we're cool, so you can do whatever you want. Ghostmaker, hey, you do things differently, but as long as we get to swing away together, I'm cool with it.
Well, I think it was the opposite, if anything, for Ghostmaker in this issue, is we finally got an emotional underpinning for why he is the way he is. And it does wrap up this backstory that we've been following in Batman for a while, which I thought was nicely done. Justin, what about you?
The relationship between Ghostmaker and Batman is so interesting to me, because I think Pete's right. It is weird. Ghostmaker is like a jerk, and he's like way too aggressive. But Batman is like, race you to the car, like at the end. I was like, okay, Batman. So it sort of is like, doesn't quite match up, but I do like that we get the Ghostmaker's origin here, and he is sort of like the scarier version of Batman, of the Batman origin, right?
Yeah, I'd say so. Once in Future number 22 for Boob Studios, written by Kieran Gillen, art by Dan Mora. In this issue, they're fighting more big monsters, and so there's some big twists. Pete, take it away.
So, I mean, come on. This is just great.
Put it on the cover.
Unbelievable comics. I mean, the cover alone is all you need to know. Like, if you think that's cool, wait till you see what's inside. You can't get enough of this. The crazy, over-the-top characters that we get in each issue. It's just fun. They're turning it to 11. It doesn't get old. Giant lion that breathes fire. Yes, please. What are we doing? Yeah, let's keep this going. I love all the sass that Grandma is throwing out there. Just more of this in our lives, please.
Love that. Grandma sass.
Nothing like Grandma sass.
Yeah, the best sass.
Yeah.
That aged sass. Yeah.
No, nobody listened to what Pete just said when he said, I love Grandma's sass.
You said Grandma's sass or I love Grandma's ass?
I mean, he definitely slurred the two together. I'm just saying.
Don't be gross, guys, please.
Oh, don't
just
be gross
to,
on this
just
podcast.
Just trying to get clarification.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I like this book. It's a great book. The art's great. The story is fun. Mm-hmm. It has been at this same pace for 21 issues.
Why
the
change first issue something that's working?
I just need a little variety here.
Stop
because it is going all. They're just like running.
Don't
running,
you
running.
Complain about something being so good for so long?
But it's like if you
like Grandma's ass, right? That's been going for 80 years, and you just don't quit.
Just keeps getting better. The pace of Grandma's sass, Grandma's ass. But it just is like if every day, if for 22 months you ate peanut butter, you'd be like, let me get something else in here. Let me try it. Let me get some less peanut butter.
Could you tell that to my son, please?
Kid loves peanut butter.
Every day. every day for lunch is driving me insane. But I agree with you. I think this is action movie over the top, but we were getting to something with these two Arthurs and two Berlins. This issue takes a little swerve to focus on our main characters, but there's some very fun bits in here. The William Shakespeare bit was great.
Yes,
like Pete was mentioning, the giant fire-breathing lion was great. Stuff happening back with the people who are staying safe at the castle. Also very fun. So fun issue. Even if I also am with you, Justin, I want to see them like crest the action here and potentially move on to something else. But still, great book.
Write your own comic, man. Don't fucking judge people's shit.
All right. I'll write my own once in future 22. Action great. Comics number 1037 from DC Comics, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson and Sean Aldridge. Art by Miguel Mendoza and Adriana Mello. This is the second part of the War World saga as Superman and the Authority attack the new Mongol. Spoiler alert, they lose horribly in this issue.
Not great work, guys.
This is actually, I believe, the last Superman comic. R.I.P. Superman. This is going pretty hard. What did you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, you can't get distracted in the middle of a fight. You know what I mean? You can't look around. Otherwise, someone's going to stab you. I mean, that's just how it's going to work.
Thanks, Pete. Well, Justin, over to you.
Good advice. I like that this issue is framed around a meeting of the United Planets, I believe, and they're saying, should we help Superman? And they're like, nah, let's let it ride. Too much going on here. We don't want to get involved. I really like that as a device, and I feel like Philip Kennedy Johnson is putting some sort of narrative space between us and Superman throughout his run. Like, Superman's sick. We're not really in his head. He's someone we're watching from a distance. And I think that's really interesting. I haven't seen that in a while. It's usually like close up on Superman. What's he thinking? Why is he's trying so hard? He's just got to go do everything. In this, we're getting that space, and it makes it a little more like it feels like we're losing Superman, and then he gets stabbed right on through. You know, yeah. It didn't look like a great situation.
Yeah.
The characters, by the way, feel very fresh and new, but there's a big Thanos and the Black Order vibe going from Mongol and his lieutenants that I think makes them really dangerous and really interesting. There's also a great bit in here with Manchester Black when he attacks one of the lieutenants.
So fun.
Great issue. Very interested to see what's going to happen going forward. Next up, go ahead, Pete.
Also, the backup was really fun. Manhunter just hanging out with its cat, double stuffed, like eating cereal like he's a little kid watching Saturday morning cartoons. Yes, more of this, please. What the fuck? This is cool.
When you see Martian Manhunter with a cat, you gotta validated.
Were you worried that he was gonna eat that cat? Because he's an alien and they love eating cats.
Yep.
What is this, Alf? Yeah. Are you making an Alf reference?
Yeah, they're all Alfs.
You fucking old man.
My favorite catchphrase from Martian Manhunter is when he says, huh, they kill me.
I love that. Wow, that's good. What a catchphrase.
Yeah.
How
to feel to dust that off.
I also love that we get a Kyle Rayner painting featured in that backup, which was very cool.
And I used to love my Hawaiian shirt Alf that I got at Burger King. Dirtbag Rapture number 3 from Odie Pret. What?
I have one of those.
You collected them, right?
Yeah,
Everybody collected them back in the day. Dirtbag Rapture, number 3 from Odie Press, written by Christopher Sabella, art by Kendall Good. In this issue, we're really getting into our angel ghosts versus demon ghost things that is going on as our main character, who is a ghost hotel, ends up teaming up with one of these demon ghosts. It goes wild and absolutely crazy. What'd you think?
Yeah, I like this book. It does go wild and crazy. It feels very unique. It's got so much layered things happening. But it's good. It's really holding together. It has a very cool narrative tone to it.
Yeah, I really love how creative and different this comic is. It's really cool. It's got really interesting characters. I love the main characters just kind of drive to get fucked up. This is fun. This is just a really cool, creative comic with a lot of interesting characters and character designs in there. The whole stressed out limo with the flames. This is just fun. We're having fun.
And last but not least, we've been asking you all to request some reviews of older stuff from us in the iTunes comments. If you got a request for us, leave it there. We would be happy to entertain it and review it here on the stack. But this is a request from Hive Mind Comics. Wanted us to check out Saga of the Swamp Thing Volume 2 from DC Comics, written by Alan Moore, art by John Totleben and Stephen Bissett, among many, many other people. Now, we reviewed the first volume of this. Justin, you had read all of it. Pete and I had ashamedly never read Swamp Thing.
Shame.
And I think, Pete, you were okay with it, right, on the first volume. I think I felt like, okay, I can see where this is going and how's this developing as it goes. So what do we think about Volume 2? Pete, I want to go to you first, since you were a little iffy on Volume 1.
I really love this. I really love the kind of questions it's asking, how deep it gets here, really kind of esoteric. And I mean, here we have some of my non-favorite DC characters. We got Swamp Thing, and then we get Green Lantern. But the story is so cool.
Are you thinking of the Spectre?
No, did I not read the right book here where we got the one-eyed Green Lantern character here?
The one-eyed Green Lantern character? What book did you read?
I read Volume 2 of Saga of the Swamp Thing, where we got this kind of green, one-eyed Green Lantern, you know, talking about life and the meaning of life and all these people and stuff. And is this not
Who's
the
it
right?
by? Is it written by Alan Moore?
Yes.
Really? All right. I think maybe you read something else. Was there all the stuff with Abigail Arcane dying?
Abigail Arcane ends with like a very
You don't have all the one-eyed people in this?
You no, I don't think so.
What? This has to be the it starts Oh my god, are you
We may need to loop back to this one potentially, unless Justin, you want to talk about this.
Wait. Come on, like this was really good. I really love this. And you're telling me I didn't read the right one?
Well, hold on. Let's find out. Well, Justin, why don't you talk about Saga of the Swamp Thing Volume 2 for a second?
I mean, yes. This is – I've read this a long time ago. I think this really gets into the romance between Swamp Thing and Abigail, and at the same – while simultaneously getting into the battle with his archenemy, Arcane. And it's great. It's horrifying at points. And all building up to, we get the death of Abigail, and then we get this great sort of counterpoint to that at the end with the Rite of Spring, which is issue 34, that is this like psychosexual, it's like, to me, the standout issue of Alan Moore's run on Swamp Thing. And it's this, like I said, psychosexual romance that I think is just, there's no other comic out there like it.
And I think I mentioned this with the first volume a little bit. And one of the things that I thought was fantastic about this one is you see where all of the things that everybody has been, not in a negative way, but copying off of for years with Swamp Thing come to bear here, where they haven't necessarily crystallized the things, but he's really figuring out, okay, this is what Swamp Thing is. This is how, oh, can he travel through the earth? Can he become part of a plant consciousness? Let's try that out. Or here's this awful thing that's happening with Arcane, her uncle. We're going to explore that. We're going to go into the dreamscape with Cain and Abel. Yeah. We're going to explore these areas while they were still in the DC universe before they moved over to Vertigo proper. That's great. The standout for me actually was the annual here. It was annual number 2, where he goes and tries to rescue Abigail from first heaven and then hell. And I get very tired of these characters like the Phantom Stranger, the Spectre, all of these ones that they're big mystical ones. I never quite get them. But here it feels like, oh, this is them in their ideal form.
Well, this is why people use them so much now. It's like you were saying, like this is sort of the version of them that everyone's like, oh, I'm going to do something like that. And the Phantom Stranger you encounter when you're going between heaven and hell because of what happened in that annual.
Yeah. So overall, really, really good. Maybe we will have to loop back to this whenever we figure out what Pete actually read. I'm so sorry, Pete.
I don't know what I read, but I fucking loved it. It sucks that it's the wrong thing.
That's great. We'll figure that out later. And for all of you out there, if you want to support this nonsense, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast on YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the comic book shop.
Later!